that the methamphetamine in this case did come from Mexico. We have no reason to dispute that fact. We believe, however, that Mr. Valdez should not receive that enhancement because he didn't know where the methamphetamine derived from. Mr. Valdez's basic responsibility, for lack of a better term, in this conspiracy was that of a courier. He picked up methamphetamine in Phoenix, Arizona, drove it to Kansas City, Kansas, and then would make return trips from Kansas City, Kansas to Phoenix with the proceeds.
Counsel, help me in looking at the briefs and the record in regards to this. Your client pled guilty without any plea agreement or anything. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. Before the veneer panel came out, Mr. Valdez pled guilty.
But this is a part of the continuation of the first case that we just heard. It's a part of a conspiracy is what we have, pretty good size. Now, I noted that the district court in the comment said that she was also taking into consideration, I think, in the sentencing of your client, everything, the testimony that came out of the trial of the co-defendant. Am I still correct?
You are still correct, Your Honor.
All right. I just wanted, so what we have here in regards to the sentencing of your client, the trial court is coupling with that evidence that she or he could rely upon from that trial. Am I still correct?
You are still correct, Your Honor.
All right. I just wanted to be sure we were on the same page in regards to that.
That is correct. Mr. Valdez was the co-defendant with Mr. Molinares, and Mr. Valdez pled out. The trial went on, and Judge Robinson took that trial testimony into consideration in sentencing Mr. Valdez.
Now, where does the evidence come from in regards to the record that's going to show me that your client, in argument in regards to being a part of the conspiracy, was from, was it October to December? The claim, in other words, of your issue, he's saying, look, I was sick. I couldn't have been a part of the conspiracy during that period of time. And yet the trial court doesn't seem to have bought that and said, well, yes, you were a member of the conspiracy. Where am I going? Can you point me to the record of where the trial court could rely on that basis for that issue?
Judge, it was our position that Mr. Valdez was part of the conspiracy from February of 2014 to July 8th of 2014.
Right.
The trial court made a determination that he was part of the conspiracy from October or November of 2013 to July 8th of 2014. The trial court relied on the testimony of a Mr. Lopez, who interviewed Mr. Valdez, and he stated during the trial that Mr. Valdez started at that period of time. At the sentencing hearing, however, we provided to the court evidence that Mr. Valdez had steady employment through December of 2013. However, he got pneumonia in the beginning of December of 2013. Excuse me, we provided evidence to the trial court that he worked through November of 2013. I apologize. He got pneumonia in December of 2013, was involved in a car accident at the end of December of 2013, and recuperated through January, not working those 5 or 6 weeks. He then got involved in this drug conspiracy. The court acknowledged that evidence came in. The government didn't object to it, yet the court still made a finding that, and I believe her comment was that if you have pneumonia or are in a car accident and disabled, you can still be driving.
Well, but you agree that it's only by preponderance of the evidence in that in the sentencing of what the trial court can rely on. And that's why I'm asking you, if the evidence is divided, then that's in the, but I'm wanting to know, is there evidence truly that the government presented that the trial court could have relied on the fact that he was a member, a continuing member of the conspiracy at that time?
other than Mr. Lopez's testimony, the government
had no idea. But Mr. Lopez, you acknowledge he did say that?
It was in the trial transcript,
yes. All right. That's, you've answered my question. Thank you, counsel.
Well, just as a follow-up on that issue, what difference does it make the length of time he was in the conspiracy? So I understand the government's position. It wouldn't have affected his offense level. So why does this issue even matter?
Well, Judge, I think it matters. I made the same argument both in the pre-sentence investigation report and in my brief. He would have been a level 38 even if he made one trip cross-country just one time. He would have met the 4.5 kilogram standard to put him at a level 38. I think it's important, Your Honor, from this point, however, if we can show he's in the conspiracy for only 5 months as opposed to 8 months, that's a 37.5% difference of being involved in the conspiracy. I think that adjusts drug amounts. It gives us a better argument for the minimal participant, whether it's the 4-level, the 3-level, or the 2-level. It puts us in a better position to make those arguments. It puts the defendant in a better light, perhaps, in front of the district court. Instead of getting a sentence of 235 months, his sentence could be less. I mean, obviously, we're not here saying that he wasn't guilty of the crime, but we are looking to get his sentence lowered.
Okay. I think I'm understanding your argument, but let me just make sure. This length of time in the conspiracy, in your view, could be relevant to the minimal participation issue.
Correct, Your
Honor. That would be one thing. And then I'm not sure I understand what else it would be relevant to. You mentioned amounts, but would that really have affected anything in terms of the calculation of the sentence?
Well, as far as doing the math in calculating the sentence, Your Honor, it still puts him at the level 38, but I think if we argue that you're in something for 5 months and your transportation amount of kilograms attributable to you is 40 as opposed to 94, I just think it puts you in a better light in making an argument to the court that perhaps...
For the guideline range.
For the guideline range, and perhaps, you know, it just gives us a better argument in front of the court. Going back to our first issue that dealt with the enhancement for the importation, I know the government is going to rely on the Fifth Circuit decision of Surfass that said that scienter is not an element. If the methamphetamine came from Mexico, then do you get the importation enhancement? Decision came down in 2012. No other circuits have followed it. I know this particular circuit almost visited the issue, I guess, in 2015, but found that the government had proved mens rea anyway of the scienter element and therefore kept that question open as to whether they were going to follow the Fifth Circuit or not. There has been only one circuit that has not followed the Fifth Circuit with the scienter requirement. Unfortunately, I found that case this morning. With the court's permission, I would like to perhaps supplement that and send it to the court for its review. But it was the United States versus Job, which was decided in 2017.
Yeah, please do file a letter.
I will. And they elected not to follow the Fifth Circuit. That's the only split that I have seen on this particular issue. The evidence at the sentencing hearing, I believe, was clear. Judge Robinson even made the finding that there was no evidence that Mr. Valdez actually went to Mexico and took methamphetamine over the state line. The only thing he might have done was smuggle illegal aliens for a marijuana grow that was going on. But even if that is taken as true, the marijuana grow does not fall into the enhancement for the importation of methamphetamine. So we believe he should not have gotten that two-level enhancement.
What's the human trafficking participation? This is with the same people who were involved in the drug conspiracy, correct?
Correct, Judge. Correct.
Well, if it's a conspiracy, what difference does it make? He's a part of the conspiracy, and if the conspiracy was bringing it from Mexico, he gets the benefit of that.
Well,
it's not a detriment to him. The court can say you were part of a conspiracy that was bringing methamphetamine out of Mexico. So whether he knew it or not, it's still the occupation of the conspiracy, in which he does not get any leniency from being there.
Well, that's an argument that can be made, Your Honor. I would respectfully say,
I didn't make it. I just stated it. That's all.
None of the other circuits have followed the Fifth Circuit. I believe there.
But that's the basis of the Fifth Circuit's point. Isn't that correct?
That is, Judge. That is what the Fifth Circuit has said, and they've said it, I believe, 57 times, if I did my research properly, since 2012, but no one else has gotten on the bus to join in with them.
Yeah.
And I think just from a policy standpoint, in the last 10 years of the dozens of methamphetamine cases, conspiracy cases I've been involved with, all the methamphetamine is coming from Mexico. And if we're not going to have some sort of scienter knowledge, then everyone in the conspiracy, even down to the courier or the low-level people, are going to get that two-point bump. We might as well just enhance the sentencing guidelines by two levels.
But that is the law of conspiracy. Even if you get out of the drug part of it, you've got some other type of conspiracy going on here. If you're a member of that conspiracy, you're stuck with what that conspiracy does and where it starts and where it ends up, aren't you?
I think you should have some sort of tie-in and relative chain, if you will, excuse me, to if you're going to get an enhancement in the sentencing guideline, there should be, at least in this particular situation, some sort of mens rea requirement. I also find it astounding that, well, maybe astounding is an overreach, but it doesn't matter if you don't know where the methamphetamine came from, but you need to have knowledge where the chemicals came from. At least that's the Fifth Circuit reading of the guideline, and I just don't see the difference as to why knowledge isn't required for the drug itself,
well,
but it's required as to where the chemicals came from.
Can I just ask it this way? Do you see the participation in the conspiracy piece of this being different in terms of applying the sentencing guideline to your client as opposed to the relevance of his being in the conspiracy for purposes of convicting him for the underlying offense? In other words, is there some separation between the conspiracy conviction on the one hand and the scienter requirement for the sentencing guideline on the other hand?
Correct, Judge.
I think that's part of your argument. That what you're arguing?
Yes, Judge.
Okay.
I believe my time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Jared Magg. I'm an Assistant United States Attorney for the District of Kansas. Again, this is the companion case to Mr. Olea Menares. Mr. Valdez was one of the primary drivers for the Olea Menares drug trafficking organization. Judge Baldock, if I could get to the answer to your question, the evidence about Mr. Valdez's timeline in the conspiracy, I think, begins at Volume 1, Document 339, and this is the Augustin Lopez testimony, starting at around page 40 and ending at around page 45, Mr. Lopez goes into discussions about when Mr. Valdez gets into the conspiracy, when he begins to drive the maroon van.
That was Volume 1?
Volume 1. This would be the trial transcripts. I apologize, Judge. That may be Volume 3. This was a very long trial. Transcripts in this are enormous. So I apologize. But it is Document 339, and it may be Volume 3, but it begins at around page 40. Agustin Lopez was one of the primary cooperators and individuals who testified in this case.
Well, the reason I ask that is because the trial court says the trial court found that the evidence was credible that the defendant became involved in the drug trafficking operation in October or December of 2013. But I wanted to know, okay, it was credible. Where did that evidence come from?
Right, and it comes from Agustin Lopez.
Okay.
And because he testifies that they begin to use, in the testimony, there's the difference between using, I think it was a Ford Focus, and then they begin to use the maroon van, which Mr. Valdez exclusively used. And Mr. Lopez begins to talk about his interview at the hotel in Phoenix where Mr. Valdez is recruited and says specifically, this was around November, December of 2013, and that his time where it ended was around the time where he was during that surveillance incident where they begin to distrust him. And so he's very clear about that. I would note, and I apologize because this wasn't raised by us, but I would note for the court's attention, in his plea agreement, when the court is doing the colloquy with him, this is Volume 1, Document 309 at page 25, she does ask him, do you agree that the government has evidence to prove that you were involved in a conspiracy from November of 2013 to the end date of the indictment? And he says yes.
Well, why in the world wouldn't you have that up here before us?
I just note it because it's in the record that he admits for that time.
Well,
I didn't raise it below, and again, I apologize. It's not. There's record support for that, but I admit and concede that it wasn't raised in our lower court briefs or at this stage. But nevertheless, there is some admission on his part.
But that was done during the admission of guilt phase because he didn't have a plea agreement.
Right. Again, it was just a colloquy with the court when they were going through the factual basis. She needed to confirm with him that he agreed with the facts as the government had set forth. And that was, again, that was on the day of trial. This was right before trial started.
Well, if you haven't raised it up here, have you waived it?
In the sense that we've waived it, but there is record support for this.
Well,
and the court, this court in Mosley and Nelson has made it very clear that if the court can affirm on other grounds, if there's record support.
That's true. It's in the record. But normally this kind of a glaring point would have been raised. And so whether or not we can affirm on any other grounds, the question is, if you waived that ground, we're not going to go there, right?
Yeah, and I concede that we've waived it.
Good.
There's no doubt about that. I would simply note it for the court's record. I do want to touch almost exclusively on the first issue.
Before we leave that issue, I'd understood your brief to say that it really didn't matter whether his involvement started at either of the...
It doesn't, Judge Matheson. And to the point that you ask on that, I would note as well, and this goes to the Ordunez-Ramirez case, because Ordunez-Ramirez was also one of the primary drivers in this court in that decision 3 weeks ago, said he doesn't get the minor participation. So he's in the conspiracy for a shorter period of time as well. So the argument that my colleague is making that would somehow impact the overall decision-making process that the court might go through when reviewing his culpability, I don't think that would make a difference. But to directly answer your question, no, it doesn't make a difference at all. The testimony was there was between 6 and 14 pounds per load. He was doing 1 to 2 loads per month. Even if you took him from February through July, again, as my colleague said, even one load's going to get him beyond the level 38. So no, at the end of the day, it makes no difference whatsoever. It only goes to the issue of minor participation. But on that point, again, If Ordunez Ramirez doesn't get the minor participation, and he's a driver of shorter tenure, how can you give Valdez, who's a longer tenured driver, someone that the record demonstrably shows that he had connections both with the suppliers and Olea Menares, who was the head of this drug trafficking organization. He doesn't, if Ordunez Ramirez does not get minor participation, Valdez certainly can't get minimal participation, which is, he doesn't get the 4 points if Ordunez Ramirez doesn't even get the 2 points. And we're talking about a driver who was in the conspiracy longer. And it cannot be overstated that Valdez brings Ordunez Ramirez into the conspiracy. So he, as the judge noted, he gets Ordunez Ramirez's time as well because of the conspiratorial act of bringing Ordunez Ramirez into the conspiracy. So in a sense, it would be difficult, I think, to give a minor role to somebody who was acting not just as a driver, but as a recruiter. But to back to the issue of the issue of knowledge, I think it's somewhat splitting hairs to say that other courts are not following Serfas. It's another thing to say that they're just not reaching the issue. This court in Beltran Aguilar passed on the issue. Serfas notes that, and this court's at least foreshadowing that there is no knowledge requirement for the importation of methamphetamine. So this case is really a proper avenue for this court to close the loop that exists. Serfas, in essence, relied on what this court said in dicta in Beltran Aguilar and finds that there is no knowledge requirement. And their reasoning is very sound in that sense, both grammatically and for policy purposes. If you look at the grammatical side of this, and trusting that the commission knew what it was doing when it was writing this, particularly from a grammatical standpoint, and looking at the plural verbs and the plural nouns that were used in how they wrote this, it's very clear that if you read it in the way that the defendant wants the court to read it, that it's not only redundant, but it just doesn't make sense grammatically. And from that standpoint, I think it's very clear, also from the policy perspective, and Judge Baldock, you kind of alluded to this, he should get the 2 points because he's bound to be liable for all of the aspects of the conspiracy, and because it is coming from Mexico. He doesn't get to sort of fall back and say, well, I didn't know. He's into the conspiracy for a reason. He wants to import this methamphetamine. He wants to distribute it. And he wants to be part of this drug trafficking organization. He doesn't, for a policy purpose, and at least the commission very clearly indicates this in B5, in differentiation between importation and the chemicals, the precursor chemicals, that they must be liable for the importation once they're in the conspiracy. And to directly answer your question, Judge Matheson, the answer to your question is no. There is no differentiation between the conspiracy he enters into in the guilt phase and how you differentiate that from the sentencing phase. And I think that was the question you were asking with that particular point. Does that culpability somehow change when you get to his, as the court in Serfas said, the strict liability that he suffers under B5. And the court also noted in Serfas that strict liability in the sentencing aspect of this does not violate due process. And there's certainly any number of these types of enhancements for individuals for knowledge purposes. But for knowledge purposes in this case, Serfas made it very clear in its reasoning that the importation vis-a-vis the actual precursor chemicals is significant. In why there must be knowledge for the precursor chemicals themselves. And that makes a great deal of sense under those circumstances, because if you're just importing the precursor chemicals, that means you're making the meth here, as opposed to having it made in Mexico and imported, which you're going to be liable for because you've entered into the conspiracy. And that would be true for any other drug, heroin coming from Afghanistan, things like that. So we would ask that the court find and join the Fifth Circuit, because we think there is strong policy reasons and obvious grammatical reasons at the end of the day that B-5 does not have a knowledge requirement for the importation, and the knowledge requirement only goes to the precursor chemicals. I have not read the job decision. I did a research before I came, did not find anything. That would have been my mistake. The job case did not come up. I have not read that case. I certainly will submit a 28J letter under those circumstances if I believe that it's necessary. But again, I think it is a splitting hairs to say that other courts are not following it. It's one thing to say that versus saying they're rejecting Serfass, which I have not found.
Counsel, can I stop you there and ask
sure.
you, do you believe it's necessary that we decide the legal issue that you're presenting? Or is your backup argument that there actually is some knowledge here? And if that is your backup argument, why should we decide the legal question?
Right. There is, Judge. The backup argument, of course, is that the knowledge and the by a preponderance of the evidence, you certainly have the testimony of Agustin Lopez, again, at page 9 of his testimony at document 339. He begins to talk about when the methamphetamine, how it's imported from Mexico, and he's very clear. It's rather obvious, I don't think Mr. Calvi's statement can be overstated that all pure meth is coming from Mexico. And this court has remarked in various cases that taking the sort of practical and day-to-day knowledge of that fact is something that cannot be ignored. But Agustin Lopez very clearly says this comes from Mexico. The defendant has direct association, relationship with Agustin Lopez. Agustin Lopez makes it very clear that Valdez is a very significant part of this conspiracy. Mr. Valdez is both an American citizen but has Mexican status. He's back and forth across the border. There's the importation, or not the importation, but the movement of individuals coming back and forth from Mexico, helping out with the conspiracy. The purity, the weights of that, there certainly was no testimony of any kind from anybody that would suggest that the methamphetamine was being manufactured in the United States. It certainly would have, I think, been a significant issue had it been determined that the meth lab was in Phoenix. There certainly was no indication of that. So to the degree that there's a preponderance of the evidence, there's certainly plenty in the record, and we lay that out in our brief.
Well, but to answer specifically, are you saying that Lopez testified that Valdez knew the methamphetamine was coming from Mexico? Or are you
no.
saying it can be inferred that he knew that?
Judge Baldor, it can be inferred. And I certainly don't want to confuse.
So your answer to her question is you're relying on that, but the testimony doesn't say Lopez says he knew.
Right, that's correct. Right. At no point does Agustin Lopez testify that Valdez knew. That, and that would have been odd, I think, for anybody to say that somebody in the conspiracy knew that the methamphetamine was coming from Mexico. It's only in the context of the entirety and the totality of the conspiracy suggests only one thing, that it was coming from Mexico, largely because of the size, the purity, and issues associated with that. Unless the court has any further questions, the only in issue 4, that was within a guideline sentence and it's presumed to be substantively reasonable. At document 486, page 78, is where the judge begins her comparison with the other defendants in that case, and I know that is the primary argument for him to suggest that 3553A6, that the court ran afoul of that provision, but that is the section when she does extensive comparison between the co-defendants within the case. And I see that my time is up. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Counsel. I don't think there was any rebuttal time. All right. I think everyone has had a full say, and we appreciate the arguments. The case will be submitted, and counsel are excused.